But that's the old me.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you're having a beautiful Saturday. Hope you're getting ready to have a great Mother's Day and thanking Mom for all she's done for you tomorrow. We're going to help make that all a little bit better for you by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture for the next 59-ish minutes or so. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often on this show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
It's been a while. I'm glad to be back. And I hate to start things off on a dour note, but oftentimes we have to kind of commemorate and do an in memoriam for things that we've lost or people that we've lost over the last couple of days since the last time we spoke. And I want to say RIP to Drake's music career. It's a sad day for casual hip-hop fans everywhere. I don't know if you're familiar, Julio, but there has been a lot of back and forth between rappers Drake and rapper Kendrick Lamar. Do you got any awareness of this?
You know, I'm obviously familiar with who both of them are. You know, we've got Kendrick Lamar, who's one of the biggest names in the game right now, and then we've got Drake, the former star of Degrassi, you know, so yeah, that's always a thing. Like, I think Drake has kind of always struggled for street cred over the years because of, you know, his child actor roots. Fairly or unfairly, I think he's, you know, certainly had plenty of time to establish that, no, he is legit. But above and beyond that, like, dude may be a rapper, but he's a pop star.
That's exactly right. And I think that's where a lot of the credibility stuff lies as well. Like, Kendrick is one of the greatest lyricists and MCs of all time. I mean, generational talent can be put up there in the pantheon of GOATs. And Drake is inarguably the biggest celebrity in the culture as far as just worldwide ticket sales, albums, outdoing everything Kendrick's ever done. But Kendrick is in that conversation for being like one of the greatest, and you mentioned that. And it's almost like the conversation between Michael Jackson and Prince. I feel like, does that kind of ring true to you in a way?
I mean, I don't know, man, because I think that there is a tendency for the entertainment media to pit two creative people against each other in that kind of way that may not be something that they see amongst each other. And I don't think Michael Jackson and Prince ever really saw each other as rivals.
I think that's a good point. More specific to my comparison is just like Prince is this artist that plays all of the instruments. He's you know, kind of a craftsman, and what many would consider to be a true artist versus, and this is diminutive, but Michael Jackson is inarguably the biggest star, and also just makes banger after banger. So, like, I think Drake songs come on, we'd all dance to him in the club. When you want substance, you go to Kendrick Lamar. And this rap beef has been so petty, but it's been picked up by national news networks all over the country. It seems to be what people are talking about. Elon Musk has weighed in on it on X. So, like,
well, you know, when I'm looking for somebody to judge hip hop credibility,
hey, dude, he's African.
Yeah,
African American.
No. when I'm looking for somebody to judge hip hop credibility or musical credibility in any way, for that matter, despite the fact that he was married to Grimes,
Yeah,
Elon's not my go-to guy. Elon's not my go-to guy on much, but like, if I want to learn how to like inherit a whole lot of money from your parents and start out life on with one foot already on home plate, then Elon's my guy. But
there you go.
You know, but yeah, I mean, dude's not, he's not in any way a music guy, much less a hip-hop guy.
So before we run out of time, I also want to say rest in peace to woke culture, Julio. It's finally dead, and it's all thanks to the roast of Tom Brady. You heard any of the jokes coming out of this thing?
A little bit here and there. I heard the bit about him getting, depending on who you ask, either him getting mad at Jeff Ross and going up to him and telling him not to say what he just said again about Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, who, let us not forget, was nearly charged with soliciting a prostitution in a massage parlor in Miami, I think it was, if I recall correctly. And then it got thrown out because there was apparently no warrant for the secret cameras that had caught him.
Interesting. You got more context than I do.
Yeah, so Jeff Ross made a crack about that, and Tom Brady got up and said, don't ever say that again. And depending on who you ask, was either completely serious about that, or according to Jeff Ross, was like, no, that was part of the joke. He was playing along.
That's how I felt when I watched it. However, outlets everywhere, that was the big headline that came out the next day, was this is the joke that took things too far. But I don't see that being the case. I got to just give the flowers to Nikki Glaser. Her segment was absolutely phenomenal. The first time I saw Nikki Glaser was on a roast back when Comedy Central did it, and her entire bit is so good and so incisive. Tony Hinchcliffe was fantastic, and then Andrew Schultz was fantastic. And, you know, these are talented professional comedians, so no big surprises there. But Drew Bledsoe and Julian, I'm not going to be able to think of his name right now, but two football players
Edelman?
That went up there. What is it?
Julian Edelman?
That's exactly right. Yeah, Julian Edelman was also very good. So, like, there's a lot of really great bits. I was being a little hyperbolic when I said woke culture's dead. That's another big talking point that's been coming out of mainstream outlets over the last couple of weeks. But to those people, I say, like, you're just not keeping your finger on the pulse of comedy. People have always been able to say edgy things, but I think because it was on Netflix and it was live and so many people tuned in that might not be tuned into comedy in the way that you or I are, they were very shocked. And I think it's great. It reminded me of one of those old school Comedy Central roasts. I've always been a fan, so definitely recommend checking that out.
Well, first of all, I think that somebody should give me some money for the fact that I got a football reference right. Because
you're in the mail.
I guarantee you, somebody bet against that for sure. second of all, you know, going back to what you're saying about Nikki Glaser, you know, Jeff Roast has kind of been set up as the roast master. Jeff Ross. It's been kind of set up as the roast master general of these things, and he's like the guy that kind of is the driving force behind. I mean, he was on Comedy Central as well.
He even talked Brady into doing this one, so you're right.
Yeah, but. Man, Nikki Glaser's the master of this.
She is a sniper, dude. Just headshot after headshot. It was so good.
She is better than anybody else at that kind of comedy. Better than anybody since Don Rickles.
Oh, wow. Like, that's a high praise.
Yeah, I mean, because that was Don Rickles' whole thing was, you know, was basically roasting everybody in sight, whether it was a roast or not.
And that was like Friars Club stuff back in the day, which is kind of the origins, which we don't have time to get to. But yeah, Don Rickles is a legend for that reason.
Yeah, and I think Nikki Glaser's in that category, man. I think she's that sharp, she's that funny, and she does it in a different way than Don Rickles does, because her delivery is so disarming, and then she just takes that sudden turn of the knife, man. And just twist it. I didn't see the roast, but I did see a little bit on one of the social media services where she was talking to Howard Stern about some of the jokes that either they were cut or they didn't let her do or something like that. And man, they were just brilliant. I just think that she's great, man. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, I'm not one to start the generational wars. You know,
oh, here we go.
The every generation is against each other. I'm pretty solidly Gen X, and Gen X has pretty well established itself as we DGAF in terms of, you know, you boomers and you Gen Z, you go fight amongst yourselves. I don't go away. All of you bother us, basically. but I gotta say, when I'm looking for, you know, an all-time classic number one hit song like a Prayer by Madonna, and I put that in the old search engine on YouTube, and what comes up is Deadpool and Wolverine trailer song, in parentheses,
Madonna
like
just now performed in Brazil in front of 1.6 million fans,
and yet
that's
one of
the
her
way
biggest
pops up,
and yet one of her biggest hits is listed as Deadpool and Wolverine trailer song.
These dang kids.
Yeah, these kids today with their Nah, I mean, it's. I just think it's funny. There's as much as I'm joking around about that. That's only natural. People are gonna encounter songs for the first time the way they encounter them, and that's the association they're gonna make with them. And if you are under 20 right now, or even under, you know, let's say under 15, you did not encounter this song on MTV in 1986 or whatever it was when it came out. 87, somewhere in there.
You know, Deadpool.
You encountered it, you know, unless your parents played it for you growing up, you encountered it in this trailer. So, you know, just like, you know, there's a lot of people who are late Gen X or early millennials that probably hear Bohemian Rhapsody and the first thing they think of is Wayne's World.
I think the first time I associated this song was with Wayne's World, but didn't it come out like reasonably close?
This would have been, you're talking about like a Prayer?
No, I'm sorry. Bohemian Rhapsody and Wayne's World. Isn't like Bohemian Rhapsody a later stage?
No, Bohemian Rhapsody was originally released in the 70s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so see, you're guilty of the same thing. You thought, oh, no. You know, it was a recent song. No, it wasn't. It was, that song was... Wayne's World came out, I want to say...
92? 91?
Yeah, somewhere in there. So it was a good, you know, like 14 or 15 years old already.
Crazy.
At that point. And in fact, it was a point of contention because Mike Myers had to fight with the studio to get the song. Like, they were like, no, we got to use something more current. These guys are, you know, let's get a Guns N' Roses song. Let's get, you know... It's like, no, this is the song. And they had to fight back for it. Of course, it ended up becoming this seminal scene that, you know, it brought the song back to the top of the charts, literally, and, you know, just introduced it to a whole new audience and just became such a key portion of that movie.
Yep.
But yeah, that song was probably 15 years old already by that time, roughly, give or take. So yeah, you know, it's only natural. There's all of us, you know, or there's songs that just are so. I feel like we're getting back into the discussion we had a couple of weeks ago about the use of music in movies.
They should go check that out if they haven't heard our discussion on music and movies.
Yeah, you can definitely hear that on the podcast if you never checked us out on your favorite local podcast provider. You can go back and listen to past episodes of the show. We did one a couple of weeks ago about the use of popular music in movies. And I think we even talked about Bohemian Rhapsody. No, we didn't. We talked about Don't Stop Me Now, which is another one. Another one that, you know, I think a lot of people associate with Shaun of the Dead, which is where we talked about it in context of. But again, a song that goes back to the 70s. So, you know.
All right, let's turn it around. Let's get back to this conversation about Wolverine and Deadpool.
Yeah, because that's
Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah, because that's why we are playing the song. We want to talk about some of the Marvel news that's come up in the last couple of weeks, because we've done these special shows the last couple of weeks and we haven't gotten into some of the some of the nitty gritty of what's currently going on in the past few weeks. And I think this is probably the first thing we haven't gotten to yet.
Mm-hmm.
Over the past couple of weeks, and that being the release of the full trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine, the only Marvel movie we're going to get this year, which is a whole other thing we'll talk about in a minute here. But How are you feeling now that we've got a full trailer for this movie, Jeremy?
Look, I think I got a hot take here. Hot take incoming. I think both Deadpool movies have been very, very good. Deadpool, by design or not, is one of those characters that really walks with one foot in the hilarious and the absurd, and the other in, like, just really skirting the line of being obnoxious. And I hope that this movie is able to recapture the things that we love so much about the character. It's got a lot of things going for it. One of the things that I'm just struggling with is to get back on board with Ryan's performance as Deadpool. So, I don't know. Am I crazy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool.
He's the dude, for sure.
I mean, the way that character has been played pretty much everywhere is the way Ryan Reynolds plays him. So
how many more good jokes are there? I mean, could he do it for 10 movies?
I mean, I don't know, because, you know, we all age, you know, unfortunately, you know, you may be playing a character that doesn't age and has a healing factor and could possibly live forever. But sad as it may be, Ryan Reynolds will not live forever and will not always be able to do the physicality of this role.
Yet here is Hugh Jackman, well into his 50s, like 24 years after the release of the first film, looks like he hasn't missed a step, which is unbelievable in itself. Yeah. So, like, I'm stoked to see him. I don't know, man. Maybe they're not showing the best bits in the trailers.
It's funny because Ryan Reynolds currently has a Mint Mobile commercial that's running before seemingly every YouTube video ever made. Has him, like, he's made up to look a little older than he is. And he's talking about, it's 2035 and I'm finally old enough for Mint Mobile's 55 and older plan. So 2035 ain't that far away.
No kidding.
So if he's going to be 55 in 2035, that means he's 44.
Gosh, yeah, these Hollywood people, they really just don't age, do they? But, I say there's a lot of things going for it, like, I love that the TVA's in it. I love that we're going to get all of these, like, cameos and callbacks to other movies. It is wild that this is the only Marvel movie coming out this year, and it's tangentially not a Marvel movie, but also it's very clearly a Marvel movie. So, like, I'm glad this is the one that we're getting this year.
Well, you know, it's funny you talk about celebrities not aging, and there are two versions of this trailer out there. There is the one that was released online a couple weeks ago, and that was, you know, a Red Band trailer, basically. But there is also a clean trailer out there, which I saw before Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the other night. And there's a couple of different jokes in that one. And one of them was, we've seen in this trailer, and it's maybe a slight spoiler, so spoiler alert for something that was in a trailer. So I don't know if you need a spoiler alert on something that's in a trailer, but there you go.
Bruce Willis was dead the whole time.
Yes, exactly. Rosebud's the sled. Darth Vader's Luke's father. Okay, all right, we're done. The main villain of this film is a character called Cassandra Nova, who we could probably talk about a little later. But when they encounter her, she has made her headquarters in the giant-sized corpse of a version of Ant-Man, you know, blown up to full giant man size. And, you know, the helmet opens and you see her walking out of the skull. Mm. And we see that in both versions of the trailer. But in the clean version, she comes out and they cut to Deadpool and Wolverine looking up at it. And Deadpool says, huh, Paul Rudd finally aged.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, that was a good, I liked that one. Because Paul Rudd is probably the at least on the male side, the king of celebrity that never ages. I guess on the female side, I guess it's Jennifer Lopez. But yeah, you know, Paul Rudd's into his 50s and still looks like he could pass for, you know, he made Clueless a couple weeks ago.
So Deadpool calls him Paul Rudd in the movie.
Oh yeah.
Is that, I just don't know, man. It's so weird. It's so freaking weird. I guess, does that make Wolverine Hugh Jackman?
Well, I mean, I don't know, because that's the thing. Paul Rudd or Deadpool has always had the ability to break the fourth wall. And he can, you know, he knows he's in a movie. He can see the, you know, the audience watching him, et cetera. Similarly to how She-Hulk was played in the She-Hulk series, which, again, both these characters are known for doing this in the comics as well. So, yeah, he kind of should know some of the things. So, especially because we've got this situation where there is a multiverse out there. He's aware of there being a multiverse out there. So from his world, you know, there might... Ant-Man might have been a movie star. Ant-Man might have been a movie series because there was no Ant-Man in that world. And, you know, he and his friends and family went to go see the Ant-Man movie. And Ant-Man was played by Paul Rudd. So there's a number of different ways they could play it. I'm okay with that. I'm very interested to see where this is going to go, because I think that they've made a point of saying more than once, this is not Deadpool 3. Like, you know, we had Deadpool and Deadpool 2. This is not Deadpool 3. This is a movie that is as much Wolverine's movie as it is Deadpool's movie.
So Hollywood is just gaslighting us at this point. This is not a Deadpool.
Well, I mean, no, they're not saying it's not a Deadpool movie. They're just saying that it is not Deadpool 3.
They're
trying to point out that Wolverine gets as much to do in this movie. Wolverine's not just showing up in a Deadpool movie. Is
Wolverine going to get the mask? That's what I want to know. Are we going to see the mask?
I mean, I kind of think so. We're seeing the blue and yellow costume, which is something we never got to see Hugh Jackman in before. So now there are bigger questions about how this all ties into the whole world. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, Make It Big is where they really earned the exclamation mark.
Yeah, agreed.
Since we're talking about Deadpool, even though we just made the point that they're making clear that Deadpool and Wolverine is not Deadpool 3, I just had to dig into the Deadpool archives, and the way that they played with that song in the first Deadpool movie was just so much fun. And I mean,
they really do put some boppers in these movies. I would give them that for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's one of the things I really like about the Deadpool films is, you know, they're not afraid to like be self-referential. They're not afraid to just go off the wall and just have some fun. And that is the main thing. Like, I want to talk about what this all means for the MCU, but above and beyond any of that, what I want is for this movie to be fun.
Totally agree. And it can, on its own merits, bring us something really special. And whether or not Deadpool, carries over into the greater Avengers and MCU movies, like, as a whole, the fact that he's able to kind of exist in this realm where he is able to be self-referential and just like pull the jokes that we've all kind of laughed about within the kind of fandom community and address all of that stuff. It can be really fun in its own right. So, like, I do think that I just hope it's a good standalone movie.
I need at some point Deadpool to meet She-Hulk.
Oh, please.
And
yeah,
I need them to both be like, you can see them too.
Like,
I need that scene more than like the big one. Like, I guess it's my equivalent of, there were a whole bunch of people that wanted a scene at some point where there was a, I can't say the way you'd really say it, but a no crap Sherlock line, and have both Benedict Cumberbatch and Robert Downey Jr. react to it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. That was something that a lot of people wanted for a long time that we never got. And I was always kind of like, whatever. I don't need that. The same thing with the Ant-Man. Ant-Man's going to be the one to take down Thanos because he's going to go up the back door.
take the rear entrance.
Yeah, that was always a bad idea too. And in fact, Invincible showed us why that was a bad idea.
Yeah, I did.
But this is kind of the hill I'll die on, because I really love those two characters. And I love their ability to break the fourth wall. And I just want to see them play off each other for 2 minutes. Not even 2 minutes. Like, give me a 1 minute scene in Secret Wars or whatever. But they've got to meet at some point. And I gotta have that little bit where they acknowledge that they're the only two that can see everything outside of the world they're already in. You do it in an episode of What If, do it wherever. I don't care. I just want to see that happen. That's the thing though, is as much as I just want to go and enjoy this movie, and I think a lot of people do, and I think that for a lot of people, this is going to exist in a vacuum in a sense, but it really can't either, because there's too much going on that's got to come together for the overall Marvel world. And that we could talk about whether you think that's a strength or a weakness. Because there are people that definitely think at this point that there's too much homework to follow Marvel anymore.
And that's a conversation that you and I have had that we've had in the past before. But let's kind of look real quick at ways that it has to tie in. And I think first and foremost, the TVA is going to play a large role in it, right?
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's clear from the trailers. So we know we're getting multiverse. We know we're getting time travel. I think there's going to be a lot of reference to the past of the X-Men. I think we know we're going to see some other characters in this film, because we already know for a fact that we've seen some characters wandering around in the trailer. If you are keen-eyed as to some of the background characters in these films, we've seen some other characters from other Fox X-Men movies in there. But we know for a fact that Jennifer Garner is popping up as Elektra.
That's pretty wild. Yeah. I kind of love that. I guess with the TVA and the time travel, multiverse, et cetera, there is a universe that could exist in where Deadpool just kind of like severs the link at the end of it. And boom, all of a sudden it is only tangentially related to the MCU. I mean, there's so many possibilities as writers that the director actually came out and made a statement speaking to what you had just now mentioned, that he doesn't want you to feel like there's a lot of homework. I don't have the quote in front of me, but basically addressing those specific concerns. But due to things that you and I talked about, having a little bit of knowledge ahead of time will probably make the movie more satisfying, right?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. When you do it right, that kind of stuff is seasoning. You know, it's something that you get if you get it. And if you don't get it, it doesn't take away from your overall enjoyment of the movie. So there is a way to do that. And if you are careful in the way you write and direct the film, you can have all that stuff in there for the hardcore fans and still have an enjoyable movie for everybody else. And everybody else can either buy into it and that's their entryway into the world, or they just see this one movie and they don't go see another one. And that's fine too. That's the way it works in the comics when it's done well in the comics. You know, you.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people don't jump in at issue number one. The idea is that you can kind of pick it up at any different place and become a fan. I mean, thinking back to something like Captain America, right? Like, most people weren't around when the original one was released, but they became a fan of the character either through seeing them in other comic books or just picking up issue 238 or whatever and following them forward. So I totally agree with that sentiment. I don't think you have to know all of the ins and outs to be able to appreciate a lot of these movies. Like, I heard somebody saying that Infinity War was the first Marvel movie they saw and that they could track it and enjoyed it from beginning to end. They understood that, like, they didn't know all of the characters in the way that audiences had, but that the story itself still made sense within the context of being its own story. So, like, that kind of stuff lets you know they're at least cognizant of it when they're making these movies.
And I think that's important when you're talking about any long-running franchise in any medium, whether you're talking about comics or novels or movies or television series, whatever. I mean, you know, we've got Doctor Who just came back with the 15th Doctor and the start of its new season after 60 years. And there are going to be people that this is where they come in.
Yeah.
And they should be able to come in and enjoy it. Now, I haven't watched it yet, so I can't say if they have, but we're going to probably talk about that next week on the show. But, you know, Star Trek, great example. There's so much Star Trek out there. Where do you start? You start where you start. And you get into it or you don't get into it. And if it's done well, you should be able to get into it at just about any point. There shouldn't be so much lore that you're going to be lost, but there should be lore.
I feel like Kevin Feige and Kathleen Kennedy, just to point out a couple of people, I feel like they've been dabbling in the commercial side of forcing audiences to consume all of the media to make it as complete as possible. And I know that for a long time, the theory behind it is probably what you and I said, but when you have such a activated fan base, then you can kind of incentivize people to watch all of it by rewarding those diehard fans. So, like, I feel like they've kind of pivoted towards, well, if you're going to watch Star Wars, you're going to watch all of Star Wars, or if you're going to watch Marvel, you got to watch all of the TV shows, or Captain Marvel 2 isn't going to make, or the Marvels isn't going to make as much sense.
But I think that's,
I think they should get away with that.
I think that's always been hype. I think that's always been something that the audience has been sold on that isn't necessarily the case. And a great example of that is how much money the first Captain Marvel movie made. Because people felt like they had to watch it because it came in between Infinity War and Endgame.
I feel like it's been even more recent than that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's the thing, is they built this expectation of people got it into their heads they had to see that movie or they weren't going to be able to follow Endgame. And that movie really doesn't have a whole lot of bearing on Endgame.
For sure.
So I mean, you can pick and choose. You don't have to watch everything. And now you may get a more rewarding experience if you do, and you may just enjoy the stuff and you want to watch everything. But, you know, I come from comics. I didn't have the money to buy everything.
Right.
So I didn't read every single thing, but I read a lot. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
See you. Want to be.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube. You just can't deny that groove, man.
Nope.
Shout out to my Gen X and millennials out here. I did want to play the Coolio song that samples that song, but Coolio's got a potty mouth.
Yeah, I know, right? And we're sitting here trying to promote Coolio's music to our billions of listeners, and he won't even let us do it.
If I play that song, then the FCC won't let me be or let me be me. So, And it would be so empty without me. But yeah, no, that original song, that groove on that's amazing. I was listening to that, and I'm thinking, man, you know, Kool and the Gang's getting in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year. Does that mean it's going to be Lakeside's turn? I mean, I'm going off on a complete tangent from why I'm playing that song, but, you know, the Hall of Fame could use a little more funk.
Absolutely, yeah. Agreed.
But I'm playing that song because we've been talking about the general Marvel news that's been coming out over the last couple of weeks, and we're going to end up devoting the whole show to it. Not my intention, but there's been a lot of it. And we've had a lot of news about the upcoming Fantastic Four movie, which right now is slated to come out middle of next year. So we're roughly a year away from this film. So we're getting a lot of casting news as we're getting ready to start shooting. Of course, we already had our leads announced a while back. We've got Pedro Pascal as Mr. Fantastic, and Vanessa Kirby as the Invisible Woman. We've got Eben Moss Backrack, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, as the Thing, and Joseph Quinn as the Human Torch. We had the announcement that Julia Garner is going to be playing a female version of the Silver Surfer. We talked about that extensively on the show. We've had a couple more announcements on the cast this week, two of whom we don't know who they're playing yet. We've got Paul Walter Hauser, who's one of those guys that's all in everything all of a sudden. Oscar nominated a year or two ago for Richard Jewell. And then the great John Malkovich also showing up in this film, although we don't know who he's playing either. And then we had one more announcement, and we do know who this person is playing, Ralph Ineson. Or it might be Innocent. I may be pronouncing that incorrectly. Who we've seen in everything from he's a regular in Robert Eggers films. He was in The Witch and The Northman. He's going to be in the upcoming version of Nosferatu that's coming out later this year. He's also currently in The First Omen, which is in theaters right now. Was in the Harry Potter films. Been in a bunch of stuff. Also going to be in Del Toro's Frankenstein. So he's hitting all the major horror icons here. The classic horror icons. Going to be playing none other than Galactus.
Oh, what a great voice for that character.
Yeah. So, first of all, let's have the fact that Galactus is going to have a voice is already going to take this above, Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's not going to be a cloud. Hopefully he's going to be, you know, an actual gigantic humanoid alien as Galactus should be. But some interested news coming out of here, out of Matt Shankman's film that's coming out next year. We know that this film is going to be a period piece. It's going to be set in the 60s. So again, talking about how, you know, we can kind of set these things off in their own little world a little bit, but still have them go into the greater Marvel multiverse of it all. Yeah, I think that gives us a place for this too. I kind of hope that's the trend of where we're going. You obviously like this casting.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, from one end to the other, they are casting people that I wouldn't have fan casted just because they're not the first names that would have popped to my mind. However, they are huge stars, and even more importantly than that, incredibly gifted actors. Everybody from Julie Gardner to Ralph Ineson, the guy we were just talking about who's going to be playing Galactus, just awesome cast. I agree with you that I love the fact that we're doing the period piece as well. And there's, you know, the opportunity for the fish out of water scenarios potentially if they do end up traveling to the current day. I think it's got a lot of potential to be fun. And like you said, there's really nowhere to go but up, especially after Josh Trank's Fantastic Four. this is Marvel's first family, they say. This was kind of Stan Lee's genesis as far as creating a family of superheroes with relatable problems and introducing what made Marvel the unique comic publication that it is today. So, like, this is where we should be right now, kind of launching this new phase forward with the MCU. So I'm excited about it.
Got any theories about Paul Walter Hauser or John Malkovich?
I can't imagine being able to... Personally, I'm so far removed from the kind of secondary characters within the Fantastic Four that I would only be shooting in the dark. But I am curious what your thought. I would think like secondary villains. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, possibly. I know there's a couple of different theories out there about Hauser. What I like for him is the Mole Man.
Oh, sure.
Who is the very first villain that the FF faced.
Is that right?
You know, have him in a small role in the film and bring that character into the world. I'm for that. That is one of the rumors that is floating around. The other rumor is that he's going to be the voice of Herbie the Robot. Which is, we've seen Herbie in some of the key art that's been released so far. Herbie is a character that was created for the early 80s Fantastic Four animated series, if I recall correctly, because they did not have the rights to use the Human Torch in that series, and they needed a fourth character.
Interesting.
Yeah, the urban legend about it is that they didn't want to put the Human Torch in the character in the show because they were worried kids were going to set themselves on fire. But that is that is just an urban legend. It is, in fact, that the Human Torch was licensed out separately and so was not available for that show.
I like the theory better.
Herbie could really kind of have any voice. I kind of like the idea of Hauser playing a physical character.
Because the
rumor is there's also the rumor that Malkovich could be the Mole Man, which I could kind of see, but you know, Malkovich is also older. Here's what I would really like it to be. I don't know that they're going to go this route, but let's play Dr. Doom the way he's played in the comics, where you never actually see his face, and you can put any actor in the suit to be the suit on screen, much like we do with Pedro Pascal as the Mandalorian. He is not on screen as the Mandalorian unless you see him take that helmet off. Otherwise, another actor playing that character. In fact, that actor is going to be coming to PenceCon in February of next year.
Hey!
Yeah. But Malkovich is the voice of Doom.
Yeah, I love it.
I could eat that up, man, all day long. I just want to hear him yell, "Richards!"
Yeah, that's a good call. I like that.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm right. We'll see. You know, we may not even see Dr. Doom in this movie, and that would be okay, too. We've got kind of gone to the Dr. Doom well a lot, and even though he is, like, one of the greatest villains of all time, and I do want to see him in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, kind of okay if he's not in this first Fantastic Four movie.
Do you think that Galactus is going to be like the antagonist, or are we kind of doing another building the Thanos situation where maybe he pops in for a moment but doesn't really take the forefront until later movies?
No, I think Galactus is the main antagonist here.
Which
is still, you know, kind of early because Galactus and the Surfer didn't show up in the comics till like issue 48 or so.
Okay.
But Doom also doesn't show up till issue 5. So, you know, we've got...
Mole Man is the first villain, huh? I would have never known that.
I have a feeling Mole Man's going to be like a cold open situation.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
You know what I mean? Like he's going to, you know... I kind of hope we don't have to see the origin again. Yeah, we can, but, you know, it's kind of like, okay, we know the Fantastic Four origin at this point. It's kind of like showing Spider-Man... It's like I don't need to see Bruce Wayne's parents killed again.
Yeah, no, I totally hear your point, but we got to think about these kids that don't know that Madonna is the artist behind Like a Prayer.
There's that. You know, we've got overall the heads of Marvel Studios are kind of saying all the right things right now, and that they know they tried to do too much and they're scaling back and they want to be the underdogs again.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, that's all great. I hope they are sincere about that. And we don't, I as much as I love all the Marvel stuff and want all the Marvel stuff, take your time and do it right. I'm good with that. One other little bit of news that's been out there that I'm just want to drop very quickly. The movie Thunderbolts now officially has an asterisk as part of its title. You got any thoughts on that?
I mean, sure. I don't care one way or the other. What do you got?
I'm hoping that portends something great. If they can pull off the kind of twist that they pulled off in the comics with the Thunderbolts, I will be very, very happy. And I don't want to give that away for anybody that doesn't know it. But we'll be talking more about this in the future. We got to go for now. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.